Welcome to Beyond Cast Service. I'm Christian Corley, and this gentleman here is James McLean.
Hello.
And this been, it's 2017, which means we are the third year into a, well, I don't know how many there are. Is it six movies? Is it six movies they've planned in total?
I imagine it'll be more, but yes, probably.
Yeah, I think it's initially six movies. So we're the third year into... we're into the third year of six new Star Wars movie years, basically. And so we've already had The Force Awakens, which was the long-awaited Episode 7. And last year we've had Rogue One. This year, it's Episode 8, The Last Trailer. The Last Trailer! If only! There will no doubt be many, many more trailers. The Last Jedi is the name of the movie. And what I'll probably do is, obviously we pre-record these things, what I'll probably do is just stick the trailer in here for you to listen to, dear listener. And I'm not that familiar with this trailer, but James probably isn't either, I don't know. Are you?
I've watched it once.
Yeah, same here, yeah. It's a nice trailer, that's about it. But I think the point is, I guess, is in the mood, because... there's some interesting stuff going on in the Star Wars universe behind the scenes at the moment, as well as what's kind of in front of the scenes, as well in front of the, within the storyline as well, through events that have happened in the real world. If any of that didn't make sense, do just rewind it and play it again, and you'll find that I'm absolutely winging it. So, you know, just play along with us. You know, we just throw these things together about 5 minutes before, and there's no script or anything. Mm. Well, James might have a script. But if he does, his butler's written it, so, you know.
Very bad script if he's written it.
That's why he's a butler. Very coherent. That's why he's a butler.
Absolutely.
So, there's a new movie coming out later this year. It's the second part of the third trilogy of Star Wars movies. Do you think they're going to go on beyond to a new trilogy after this trilogy?
Probably.
It's not looking bad for them to do it, is it?
Yeah, I guess so. It's becoming the second don't care of a don't care trilogy for me.
Is it?
Yeah, I didn't like Force Awakens.
No, you didn't. No, I remember.
I thought the new characters were nice. Nice. That's such a word, isn't it? I thought the new characters were interesting, but
yeah.
I didn't feel it was really... I don't want to say I didn't understand Star Wars, because that sort of is a very arrogant thing to say. Star Wars is a different thing for different people, but it just didn't feel like... there was coherency there for me to be impressed by it. It just felt jumbled, and I suspect this one will feel equally as jumbled. And I imagine a third one will too. So yeah, no, I'm a bit disappointed about that, but no, I'm not. I mean, I'll watch it, but it's now like watching any sequel movie, like watching Batman 2 or Spider-Man 6. It's, you know,
Say Batman 2, which Batman film are you talking about?
Well, that's what I mean. It could be any of them, couldn't it? Spider-Man 6 could be, you know, is that Spider-Man the third? Well, yeah.
Homecoming is Spider-Man 6, isn't it?
It is. We've just had Spider-Man 6,
yeah,
don't
yeah.
we? So, yeah, it lacks... I lack the love for it. I just don't know. It just doesn't fit to me. It doesn't feel like it quite fits properly. But for a lot of people, it does. And for that reason, it will make its money and they'll keep making them.
Yes. No, well, I think it's undoubtedly the case. I mean, we've already seen that there is a Han Solo movie in the offing, which has gone. It's had some terrible problems, hasn't it?
Yeah.
With people dropping out, with scripts, with losing the director, with... a lot of fans not giving a damn about it. A Han Solo origin movie to most people is Star Wars.
Yeah.
New Hope.
I think that's the problem, is that feeling a lot of people have said that the series can't seem to get away from its core characters. And that's possibly what made Star Wars good and what makes Star Wars difficult to expand. Is that there isn't really much of a universe there. The universe is... I don't know. I mean, there is a universe there, but I think it's because it's such a fantasy universe. I don't know. There's just something. I mean, the people have said this before, that, you know, Star Trek and Star Wars, there are distinct differences between. And Star Wars, I never really felt that there was a structured universe really in it until it needed to have it. Does that kind of make sense?
Kind of
that
makes
it was,
sense, yeah.
You know, it was the central protagonist in this fantasy world where anything could happen almost.
Well, I think that's why, I know there's been a lot of spin-off novels, but particularly Timothy Zahn's trilogy of novels, I think that's why they did so well, because they were able to, they basically identified that problem and fixed it.
Yeah, and they gave, yeah, the expanded universe gave a lot of structure to that world and to that universe. But it doesn't ever feel like that universe has ever felt fantastically comfortable deviating away from those central characters or variants of those central characters. I don't know. It's a weird universe that it doesn't feel like its beginning point is those three films, and everything just seems to circulate around those three films somehow. And it doesn't seem to really have a notion beyond that yet.
I think the thing with the Solo movie is that it's supposedly an origin movie.
Mm.
Okay, so like an origin movie is how someone comes to be who we know them as. But that's what happens in Star Wars and most of The Empire Strikes Back. You know, so this origin movie is how this guy turns out to be, is like born an arsehole. And then by the end of the two movies along in the original trilogy, he's turned into sort of like a reasonable guy. That's the origin movie there.
Yeah.
It's crackers.
And also they've done origins of him in various extended medias as well. Yeah. So it's not even like it's not been tackled before. Mm. So again, you feel like it's not like it's breaking new ground. Obviously for the mainstream consumer, it is new ground, but it doesn't feel like it's not something that's been considered and felt needed. And I think that is the problem with it. And Star Trek has the same problem, I suppose, to be fair, is that in all its formations, it's still doing the Star Trek Enterprise and its crew, bar Deep Space Nine, arguably.
Hmm.
Everything else is the it's a military vessel exploring various new worlds, or it's the Federation in some form. You never see, they've never really managed to do, you know, a planet in the in the Star Trek universe and its governing issues. It's never.
Well, that's
tried
it. That's the only place they've got left to go, though, isn't it? A colony. But there's no reason why they shouldn't do it. We should, you know, when they've done Deep Space Nine was different enough from Star Trek, the original, and TNG to be interesting.
But it was still part of a military infrastructure.
Sure.
It was still resonating, and the same thing. You had to have a captain. You had to have a science officer. You had to have the hybrid. And they all seem to do this, and it's very rare you see them branch off within those own worlds. I mean, some of them have tried it. I mean, Battlestar Galactica tried it with Caprica, and was unsuccessful for many reasons. Partially, in my opinion, was that they still couldn't get away from their legacy of Cylons.
Mm-hmm.
When I thought they were going to do Caprica, they were going to do sort of the hybrid Law and Order in space, pretty much. But they didn't. It was nothing like that. But you don't see that shift away from those prime functions. And maybe one of the reasons I quite like Clone Wars is, even though again you had the central characters, they were being played out in a slightly different model, this ongoing war saga, and it felt like you're exploring the universe in a different way. And I've not really yet found Star Wars doing that. In fact, Star Wars is doing the thing that Galactica sort of did, New Galactica, and sort of doing the sort of it's happened before, it'll happen again thing, where these motifs through the Skywalker legacy seem to be repeating themselves in circular motions. And so you see all this foreshadowing, and which is all great, but ultimately it means that Star Wars still remains basically not about universe, about the trials and tribulations of Skywalker's family.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I mean, maybe that's why Rogue One felt like a little bit of an exciting thing, even though again, it was trapped within the melee of the original films. It was that you were dealing with people who were not super characters.
Mm.
You know, Luke is essentially a super character. Solo, to some degree, is a super character. I mean, you could arguably put him into Rogue One and he could have died with the rest of them, I guess. But, you know, you've got a load of people who feel like they're the grade below. And that was something slightly fresh.
Yeah.
But
well, going back to Clone Wars, there's obviously a character in Clone Wars who has also been mentioned as a spin-off character, which is probably, I think maybe the problem with the solo thing is that they're starting with the solo thing, but maybe they should be starting with Obi-Wan Kenobi if they're going to go down that road.
Yeah, I think that's probably, I think that's probably true. I think certainly because Kenobi, again, we're following along the line of the lineage of Star Wars. Kenobi has a connection between the movies. He does. He is a very interesting connection point. And there is this big gulf where he disappears, obviously, which is stories that could be told.
Yeah.
While with Solo, it's almost like doing the young Kenobi, if young Kenobi before the, you know, prequel, which would seem fairly pointless again.
Yeah.
So yeah, the Kenobi makes more sense.
Well, there's the novel, isn't there, called Simply Kenobi, which I've not read, but I've listened to some of the audiobook version, and it's got a good start off. It starts really well. I will eventually get to finishing it, but it's certainly got a very good starting premise.
Well, I think also with Kenobi is that you've got a character which certainly has almost like classic pathways, in the sense that, you know, you have this young, optimistic character who the original trilogy suggests like hubris he takes on Anakin. The prequels sort of suggest he had no choice. It wasn't really hubris at all. But and then that all unwinds, and then he has this whole issue of being part of the destruction of his world, and how does he come to terms with that for his finale, his final appearance in Star Wars? So you've got something there that could bridge that story arc of his character, of his life. So I think that again makes it interesting. But I still kind of feel Star Wars misses the approach of actually trying to do brand new characters, and Rebels does it, to be fair, to some degree, even though again it is still fitting the same archetypes of Star Wars. It is essentially as if when the Millennium Falcon takes off from Tatooine, instead of going to Alderaan, it goes on to escapades as a team as part of the rebellion. You know, it's almost like that Rebels is that divergent point, because I mean the Ghost and its crew are pretty much archetypes of the Falcon and its crew. Uh-huh. You know, you've got the Jedi, you've got the training Jedi, you've got the big fierce Wookiee character, you've got the droid, you know, you've got a few extras, but essentially you've got that same setup again, but in a slightly different variant. So yeah, I don't really know where they're going to go with it, and I just kind of feel where they're going with it is a bit lazy. You know, the whole repeating of the Skywalker thing for The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like it's offering anything to make me care. And that's the problem. I don't really care about Ben Solo, because he's really just trying to do what the film's trying to do and wear Darth Vader's shoes. You know, I don't massively care about Rey. I mean, she's a nice character, but ultimately she feels a bit like a god sort of like a god machine of, you know, Luke Skywalker, sort of a fast track variant of that. And you feel that's following that legacy again. You know, there's some interesting sub characters. You know, Finn's quite interesting in himself because he doesn't really fit any of the paradigms of Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
You've got his roguish friend Poe, who is a little more like Star Wars, but perhaps, again, more like Rogue One than Star Wars. So there are elements there which are interesting, but the central core elements, especially the Abrams, you know, mystery box elements, I think maybe, again, because we're all a little jaded to mystery boxes, that thanks to him and people like Lynch as well, that doesn't really excite much. I don't really, because they've got a position which, with their mystery box of who Rey is and who Snoke is and the likes, which is very Abrams. The problem is eventually, ultimately, we've had these before, and with Battlestar Galactica, that are very rarely fulfilling.
Mm.
So they pitch themselves in a great PR position where it helps them promote their next movies, but ultimately leaves people feeling dissatisfied.
Well, I'm pretty sure that Snoke is River Song.
Well, yeah, that might make some Doctor Who fans' genitalia explode with thrills, but everyone else and other Doctor Who fans may be a little disappointed by that. Because they make it such guesswork. Whoever Snoke is in the end is going to be disappointing.
Yeah.
So there's loads of trappings in this new trilogy which just don't excite me, because we've seen them, I think, probably played out too many times before. And I think they would, if they were to continue Star Wars, they'd have been better off doing it like they were doing Rogue One and just doing a load of individual movies, which maybe occasionally have ties or nods to the original series, but are not retellings or trying to reenact or trying to relive those films. And I think that's the problem they're in.
Yeah.
You could have had a second film which was dealt with characters like in Rebels or like in Rogue One who come across for Luke Skywalker. And you could play that bit out. You could have that. That could be your an interest in people coming to see the film. But ultimately, it's not about what has been set up again is the Empire's back. It's like it's a universe. Why does the Empire have to come back in any form? Why does the universe have to be dominated by some galactic structure? Why could it just not be a universe in relative peacetime with not, you know, neither peaceful nor aggressively at war, where you have a band of people trying to get by? Why does that universe have to be constantly exist in a frame of war to exist? I know the term is Star Wars, but you know, you don't see Deep Space Nine rocketing through space on its trek. You know, to some degree you can break away from the title suggestion. I don't know. It just, yeah.
I can sympathize with a lot of what you've said there. Just want to look at the two movies. We'll probably talk about Star Wars 8 in more depth later in the year, before Christmas. So I just want to skip forward to some of the stuff that's been going on behind the scenes with the Star Wars movies that are still in production. You've got the Han Solo movie, which we've already discussed. It's got an interesting cast. Emilia Clarke of Game of Thrones is in there. Tandy Newton, Paul Bettany, Woody Harrelson. Alden Ehrenreich is Han Solo. Donald Glover is Lando Calrissian. I look at this film and I think the only reason they're making it is because they want Donald Glover to play Lando Calrissian.
Yeah, it does kind of feel like someone seen a meme 4 years ago when Community was playing, gone, he would be great as Lando Calrissian, yeah, because he's a black actor who's young and he's cheeky like Lando Calrissian. You know, you feel like, well, it's a bit meme worthy.
Yeah,
but saying that, he is a good actor.
He's
obviously a great comic actor, but when I've seen him in other things, he plays them really well. So I think he could probably nail Lando Calrissian pretty well, even if he wasn't known for that sort of slightly cheeky, sort of cheeky charmer archetype that he sort of has in some of Community. But yeah, it does feel a bit, all of it feels a bit by the numbers. I think the other problem is, and this is always the danger when you have a character which is really made, the icon comes as much from the casting as the character themselves, is whether you can really create another variant of that person without it feeling like someone playing the characteristics of the original or a totally different character. And Indiana Jones obviously had this when it did its young Indiana Jones. It was, how do you do that? How do you reconcile that? And Sean Patrick Flannery sort of just went and did his own thing, I guess, largely. But yeah, I mean, Han Solo himself is not a fantastically engaging character. He's a rogue who, yeah, as you say, finds a new path through his, through fighting a cause he wouldn't normally fight for. But beyond that, it really is Harrison Ford which makes Han Solo, which makes having someone else be Han Solo. Are you really making someone else just be Harrison Ford? And so you come to the point and think, is this really worth doing? But apparently, financially, it is. And I don't think I can really reconcile that. I mean, I know we all have this problem. You know, Doctor Who, you know, David Bradley as Hartnell to me is still a bit of it's a bit of a push, a bit of a pointless push, really, in an odd way.
It's a bit Mike Yarwood.
Yeah, it kind of feels like, why do we need...
A suspension of disbelief is required.
A massive suspension of disbelief. Yeah. You kind of think it's a suspension of disbelief that is required, which I don't feel is required, if you see what I mean. I don't know why we're mining this. To the point where we're having to recast everyone to make a story which doesn't really have any necessity in being done. I know, I suppose people would argue, yes, it does. It's time travel, a person who meets himself. It should be done. Therefore, you're going to need to recast. But I think sometimes you start thinking, how much do you separate characters from person on the page to the person playing it? How much does the actor personify that continuity of that character. I mean, yeah, you can have 100 people play the first Doctor, as you can have 100 people play Hamlet, but the 100 people playing Hamlet aren't meant to coexist, while the 100 people playing the first Doctor, which is what it's starting to feel like, are meant to somehow coexist. And that just starts to feel like you're almost losing the uniqueness of the character, which is brought by the actor, by people who are either creating a new person through their acting or just replicating the previous actor. And I don't know whether that has worth. And let's say, because we're not making about Doctor Who, about Star Wars, that's one of the issues here. I mean, can you think of a recast which has really worked in itself?
I mean, within a single storyline, no, I can't.
Yeah, within a singular continuity. I mean, there's obviously very... I mean, David Bradley's Big Finish run, I mean, I'm going to presume that they're going to sort of try and keep that separate from the main continuity, just simply because it's going to get complicated. If Big Finish isn't complicated enough, fine. Yeah, you know, different versions of the same story. I think, you know, different acts, that's great. Different, you know, reboots, revisionings, different Starbucks, you know what I mean? But when it's in that same continuity, I think recasting very rarely sits well. Apart from Bewitched, where, you know, somehow they virtually got clones of Dick York.
No, I wouldn't argue with you. Back with the Solo movie. It's been written by Lawrence Kasdan.
Yep.
Who's obviously got some form for writing Star Wars movies. And it was initially going to be directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, but they were sacked 3 weeks away from finishing principal photography back in June. And presumably there's a hell of a lot of reshoots taking place under the eye of Ron Howard.
Howard, yeah. Which is, it's a good eye to have.
Absolutely, yeah. I wouldn't argue with that. But it's an interesting parallel. They were accused of making a film that was too comedic. And if we look at Star Wars 9, in which a few days ago Colin Trevorrow was sacked or removed as director of Episode 9 and replaced by J.J. Abrams, Trevorrow was accused of wanting to do some interesting... Well, accused. He said that he wanted to do some quite different, interesting things over the course of the shoot, but obviously it's a lot earlier in production. One of the things that he wanted to do was shooting out of space, which isn't as crazy as it sounds, because there's a lot of good footage coming from our space telescopes at the moment, apparently. But it's has been suggested that he's a rather overconfident character, shall we say. So it just seems it's a little bit worrying that you've got these big movies taking place and you're pulling, you know, you're grabbing, like, you know, names of the moment directors in and then sacking them.
It's the whole thing they said with Abrams, as we've said before, I think, that he started to get really nervous about his cut as soon as the promotion started kicking, because it's such a big movie. It's a big franchise now. It's probably one of the biggest world franchises in entertainment.
Mm.
And you have, you know, eventually you have singular people who are going to be motivating its success with a lot of eyes watching and wondering whether this particular chapter is going to enthuse people for more commodities of Star Wars or sort of make them back away. So when you get that sort of, you know, when something becomes worth that weight in gold, I imagine the politics becomes that much more potent, that, like you say, big names become little fish compared to the size and potential profit investments within that commodity. And it's a tough one. And I think I think one of the other problems they've got here, and I think this is an interesting thing, is that, I mean, it's like having Lawrence Kasdan involved in it. It automatically makes you feel it's in safe hands. And yet there was stuff within The Force Awakens, which he was very pleased with, which I thought was terrible. There's that bit where Rey and Finn are being chased on the desert planet that's not Tatooine, but might as well be. And they and they're running along, and they the ships are being destroyed, and they say, what's about that one? And they go, no, what's about? And then they realize and turn, it's Millennium Falcon, and he was there, you know, and the audience will be shocked and surprised to see the Falcon at that point. I don't think anyone was shocked and surprised, and it just felt a bit twee, and that's what I mean. And you know, he's the I am getting. He was involved, wasn't he? In both, wasn't he? He was both in Force Awakens.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm now just worried that, you know, I'm picking fake memories out of the air. But you know, the guy primarily considered responsible for the integrity and strength of The Empire Strikes Back. You know, I wasn't quite sure whether that was being handled in the same way in The Force Awakens, because you know, people change over time.
Yeah.
You know, comedians change massively. Actors change massively. And again, you know, you may have these names, but like you say, there's such forces at play. There's no certainty that they're going to be able to work in the way they want to work, and they may have to work in ways that they don't want to work, or do their best within certain conditions, or just may. I don't know. It's such a messy industry.
Yes.
It's so hard to find where you're going to where the certainty is in it, which is obviously the core thread amongst the whole industry, is how do you create certainty in an industry which is so unpredictable? You know, no one can tell when you watch a film or when you produce a film whether it's going to be a hit or miss. Even, you know, big names, you know, there's never any guarantees.
No.
And that's where, obviously, ultimately, as you say, obvious in Star Wars, one of the biggest franchises in the world as far as media goes, and people are sort of running around like headless chickens because they don't know what's going to score.
Yeah.
The optimal success.
Well, there's also real life comes into play as well, isn't there? One of the accusations that's been levelled at Star Wars 9 prior to J.J. Abrams taking charge again is the script rewrites that were necessary when Carrie Fisher passed away.
Right.
And that's that's believed to be one of the reasons why they're so far behind schedule and why Trevorrow was moved on.
Yes.
But I mean, at the same
real
time,
real life tragedy can be a real, real skimp the fun out of production. Hey?
Can't it just?
Out of making money.
Well, if you're going to lose, you can look at it in two ways, can't you? Because maybe he's kind of, you know, lost the grip, because it was rumored that she was going to be like the main focus of the film, in the way that of the older characters, in the way that Han Solo was, of Force Awakens and Luke Skywalker, said to be the last Jedi.
Mm, makes sense.
So to lose what is essentially the linchpin of the movie, that is going to throw you a bit, I think. And maybe it would have been more sensible to simply throw the towel in at that stage, I think, maybe, perhaps, rather than what seems to have happened is drag it on for a few months into an unhappy production.
Yes. This is just such a baggage of expectation now, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because you could see how one franchise takes Star Trek, went from, you know, its slightly humble beginnings, where it got this massive cult following. Because I know, okay, Star Wars was a big blockbuster hit initially, but it had its humble beginnings in its lack of certainty, that people didn't, you know, people in the industry weren't sure it was going to be big. To the fact it becomes big, but you see with Star Trek, you see it then being oversaturated and to the point where it just declines slowly up one of its orifices and dies, and then has been attempts to revitalize it, and the films have done well to some degree commercially, but there's been arguments about whether they've been really what Star Trek's about. And now you're sort of seeing with Star Wars that Star Wars was perhaps its legacy became in the fact that there was too little when people wanted more, and now you've got more, the expectations and demands for it makes it very hard to deliver something that's going to be of the right, that's going to hit the right note. And like you say, all these things happen. I mean, I still think with The Force Awakens, they made a massive error in that by holding Skywalker back. And it's easy now to say with retrospect, because obviously with poor Carrie Fisher passing. But, you know, that film would have, you know, to have had what the fans really wanted. They wanted to see Solo, Skywalker and Organa together. And by trying to tease that out, and I suspect the teasing out was to try and use Skywalker to become the central draw to the second film for audiences. Mm-hmm. You sort of, as you say, you've gone for this sort of weird balance of a character per film, which now just falls on its head. And you think, ultimately, if you were to just give what audiences wanted rather than trying to string them along three films, you'd have given them a film which had all the trappings that they wanted, and then risked that they would come back for a film after. Maybe a film that was after didn't require the original three. Mm. Maybe if you'd just given them that for their Force Awakens, you could have moved on to the next one and then just had a few cameos of the other cast. It just feels a shame that you've lost the opportunity now to have those three people work together, which is what you wanted to see. You'll see Leia and Luke, and you'll see Han and Leia, but you'll never see Han, Leia, and Luke. And that, to me, was, you know, another big mistake. It's just so funny, isn't it? Because I look at The Force Awakens, and I just can't believe that with the top minds in Hollywood, that was the best that they came up with. I mean, it's not a terrible film. It's quite watchable. It's got, as I say, it's got some charming actors in it. It's got some great special effects, and it's got glitter in it and understanding of its visual trappings of the originals. But ultimately, you know, it is a messy film. And you just think, surely they could have had something which was a little more, I don't know.
I kind of know what you mean. I mean, if I had a choice, you know, if I had both DVDs or Blu-rays in front of me, if I had Force Awakens in one hand and Rogue One in the other, I would put Rogue One on.
Well, this is it.
9 times out of 10.
It's not fans sort of saying, if I had The Empire Strikes Back or Star Wars A New Hope in one hand and I had Force Awakens in the other, I'd always go for A New Hope. I mean, no, take that aside. Take two contemporary versions.
Yeah.
And The Force Awakens does not have a feeling of a structured professional story as Rogue One has. And yes, Rogue One does lean on a lot of trappings from previous genres, but that's what Star Wars has always been about, is a homage to a myriad of popular genres sort of merged together to make something feel slightly fresh and yet familiar and exciting. You know, that's what it's all about. It's what Rogue One does. The Force Awakens feels like this sort of dipping toes tentatively into the past while trying to do exactly the same as the past, but in the now. It feels, it just doesn't, and it does it messily. It doesn't have any real structure to it. It meanders around the place. It feels like Star Wars, but nowhere near as polished as Star Wars, in the same way that Star Trek Into Darkness feels like a totally unpolished version of the Wrath of Khan. It's like, why homage a film? This is what gets me with The Force Awakens. Why homage one of the most overwatched, overanalyzed, overloved films of the 20th century in a way that you know you're never going to be able to compete with that memory? Why do that? Why not just do something entirely different? And this is what I mean. You don't need a galactic empire. You don't need a Death Star. You don't need a Skywalker. You don't need a new Darth Vader. You don't need to repeat these things. You've got your universe. You can still have your bloody lightsaber and your Millennium Falcon, and you can still have, you know, enemies and monsters, but you don't have to replicate the thing which is considered almost like cinematic gold, because you're never going to make cinematic gold from it, cinematic gold. It's crazy. And so you've got the same with Solo movie. The Solo movie is about recreating Harrison Ford's character exactly, but it's Harrison Ford. Why do that?
Without Harrison Ford.
Yeah. It just seems utterly insane. You're better off doing young Boba Fett, or I was just thinking young son of Solo, or Solo's father. You could do the story of Solo's story. If you wanted to do something that really had to connect to Solo, why don't you do his lineage? You could do the Solo's, you know, back a generation in the Clone Wars. It just feels like, and I think what is interesting is that the Star Wars, which I think have been a success, have been the ones which have been the ones which haven't had the pressure of success riding on them. So Rogue One really didn't. Rogue One was a standalone, which I don't think anyone expected to perform as well as it did. Rebels, the Clone Wars, you know, those are the ones which have had integrity. The ones which have felt a bit flaccid and confused have been, you know, Return of the Jedi,
yeah,
Phantom Menace, Force Awakens, the ones with these big riding expectations to fulfill.
Speaking of the Phantom Menace, briefly.
If we must.
My daughter brought home her reading book, because they get books every day, although Erin's slightly higher level of reading than her twin brother, so he tends to get through one book a day, whereas hers are longer, so she takes like 2 or 3 days to get through them. And she brought home the Lego Phantom Menace book.
Okay.
It's basically an adaptation of the Phantom Menace. And on the first page, you've got references to Galactic Federation and the Republic and all this stuff. This stuff that's utterly meaningless to children.
Yeah. I mean, I actually remember when I watched it when it came out, you know, and obviously I was an adult. And I was watching it and I was seeing all this thing in the trawl, and I was thinking, I'm trying to tax Galactic. I don't care. What's this? I don't care. Please, I just don't care.
I couldn't be bothered reading it at all once I got past Trade Federation. I thought, bloody what?
I mean, I had to read up about it really to actually understand really what was going on. It was such a convoluted political mess. And yet at the same time, in fairness, it was trying to world build, wasn't it?
Well, I think it worked ultimately, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did. But I think sadly, the way it worked needed to, I think the Clone Wars animated series made it work, because it sort of managed to really give you a feeling of how this was all functioning.
Yeah.
And it gave you a feeling of what the Emperor was, Palpatine was playing around with in this. The Clone Wars to me is the prequels. I mean, I'm not saying the others aren't canon, you know, but I'm just saying, personally speaking, I just toss the others aside and I just focus on the Clone Wars, Rebels, Rogue One, Star Wars trilogy. And, you know, the rest is moot, really, I think. I mean, maybe this second of the new trilogy, and as you say, the third one, maybe when you get these names behind these, and same with the Solo with Ron Howard, maybe we'll see some new changes when you get these really good directors come in who do manage to save crashing projects. But, you know, I don't know. What do you think?
I think it's, you know, a Ron Howard cinematic failure is extremely rare these days. I don't think he's had one in 30 years, has he? So.
Well, that's it. So maybe, you know, because we always, when we see things starting to crash like this, it normally does seem to be noticeable in the box office. I mean, I suppose, to be fair, Rogue One had some trepidation, didn't it, with some last minute changes being mooted closer to time. But I think a lot of people saw them as pros, because it was largely about tone, wasn't it? And it was tone in the way that people wanted to see, so perhaps that saved it. I don't know, but yeah, by and large, when you hear about sort of issues that they're having on this, and issues you hear in things like Justice League, and issues that were in the Suicide Squad, and when they're big issues, like you say, when you have director changes, it doesn't bode well. But maybe he'll prove that it can change. I don't know. I mean, the industry and how we watch stuff is changing so much, you can never quite tell where things are going to go still. I'll be interested to see. I think I always find the promotions interesting. I mean, they talk about the next one being darker, sort of mind-blowing. You're not going to see where it's going to go. It's going to be like The Empire Strikes Back, in the sense it's going to be a real major middle trilogy. And then you watch them and you think, oh, no, this actually felt more like The Force Awakens still.
Yeah, I think that's the big risk. And I know you kind of mentioned this earlier, didn't you, about the surprise box, the secret box, whatever it's called. You know, sci-fi and fantasy fans are pretty much, and there are a lot of us these days, whether you're like a fanatic or whatever, because it's, you know, that genre of television and cinematic are quite mainstream now.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that are expecting, that have got their heads kind of tuned into working out what the surprise is going to be. So there is this idea that there's going to be a surprise and you're never going to guess what it is. Well, I think, you know, so many explanations have been suggested for race, parentage, and for who Snoke is, that someone's got to have got it right.
Unless they do something where no one could get it right, because it's something totally new.
Totally new,
and
yeah.
Thus that will disappoint people as well. So that's the problem with the mystery box. And I think the mystery box can only work on a short-term basis, and films and long long television series are just too, they keep people pulled along for too long to be satisfying. Yeah. If your mystery box exists for one season, at the end of the season you get your reveal, people I think are okay with that. They feel they've had enough time to be guessing a bit, but not enough time to be over guessing so they can enjoy it. But on things like Star Wars, where you're going to have like 2 year gaps in between where people are chatting about it, invariably it just ends up as being a misleader for promotional purposes.
Well, Doctor Who, when you've got River Song from 2008 through to 2011 or 12.
Yeah. And again, people were unimpressed with that mystery box reveal, especially since it felt, as it was, worked out retrospectively rather than being something which was, you know, put in at the time.
Yeah.
You know, this idea that she was going to be Amy Pond's kid. I know it just, you know, River Pond, but it's like, sorry, I'm not sure I buy that. So yeah, it's a difficult, mystery boxes are like any enigmas in stories. Is that they're very easy to set up, really hard to pull off successfully. I mean, I think you're better off. I think the better ones are mystery boxes when you actually can play a reveal where the gambit is given to the audience straight off. I mean, we talked about this, I think, in the other podcast when we talked about Ashes to Ashes. Was it us? I think it was us.
It was us, yes.
Yeah, with the end of season one and where you play that card really up to the audience's noses. So when they get the reveal, they feel gratified, even if they don't get it, because they feel that they were being given that information the whole time and they didn't see it. That is the power. That is what you really want. Mystery boxes don't do that. Mystery boxes often try and circumnavigate that. They don't give you anything in the hope that you just got to speculate your way to the end. And then when you get to the end, it's no good. So, yeah, I don't know.
So, so what do you think? What are you expecting from Star Wars 8? Are you looking forward to the Han Solo movie? Or is that kind of like is that hands off for you? Is that, you know, leave Solo alone, let's do something different, or let's just get on with finishing off the trilogy rather than standalone movies? And how do you feel about mystery boxes? I'll be honest, I haven't heard the term before today.
It's one that Abrams appropriated, and I can't remember the details of it, but people would argue that he misappropriated it.
Okay.
I think mystery boxes are meant to be ones where, like I say, that there is a reveal to be found, where he tends to do them in the same way that Ron Davis did with Galactica and Moffat did with Doctor Who, is that they aren't pre-planned, and then they are used to propel audiences' interests to reveal later something that hadn't been set up initially. So they're sort of misused. And there's a lot of stuff, I think, on mystery boxes if you look on the internet. I think I've got the right term. I've never...
Well, if you haven't, you've just coined it, so that's good.
Let's see if they... It's not springing up. J.J. Abrams and the Mystery Box. There's a TED Talk where he coins it. I will send... show notes for you, yeah.
Okay.
And you can listen to him say everything which I haven't, because I've probably misremembered it. And it's... I don't know.
It's always good to expand our dear listener's mind. That's it from us. One of us, will be back doing something for you next week. Until then, it's goodbye.
This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.